Today is Sunday, May 16th, 2021. This is part 13 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Jim Haggart, last name spelled H-A-G-G-A-R-T. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Jim. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Tom. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. Jim, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes, of course.
Thanks so much. Last time we left off in 1997, you did some hiking in the fall of 97. I wondered if you could pick that thread up for us.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, the fall of 97 was just one of the more incredible trips I've ever taken. And it's almost 25 years later now, and I still have such vivid memories of so many of the things we did on that trip. And I guess because it was such a variation in topography and hiking experience, and because we got to spend so much time along the river, that this particular hike stands out, I guess, in my mind. So anyways, in October of 97, Bruce Scrubs and Art Christian and myself, you know, kind of like the not the Smothers Brothers, but that threesome of comedians from the 30s and 40s. Anyways.
Larry Joe and Curly Moe.
Yeah, exactly.
The Three Stooges.
Three Stooges, yeah. The Three Stooges headed off and decided to do a Powell Plateau navigation. And this, you know, this was not unknown, obviously, because Charles Steck had written about this. In his Treks book, I think it's called Treks, or no, it's called, Steck's book.
Loop hikes.
Yeah, loop hikes, and one of these that he had written about was the Powell Plateau loop hike, but nonetheless, you know, it fascinated us, because we hadn't, that was a huge part of the canyon that we hadn't gotten into to any extent, And Art and I had been down Stephen Isle and Conquistador Isle on the south side of the river on our trip from Bass Trail to Enfilade Point and back.
And you had done some of this route on your solo hike.
Yeah, the northern end I had, because my plan for that solo hike had been to do much of the traverse up the river. Then going around Powell Plateau that way. But I was unable to cross, if you can remember,
to Peach Creek.
Exactly, because of the high water, so I had to work around that. So, yeah, I had been thinking about this for, you know, 25 years at that time, and so I was very excited to do it. We loaded up Art's car. I think he still had his Honda then, and took off. And because it was in October, you know, you're dealing with potential snow conditions on the Powell Plateau, and we were planning to do a 12-day hike. So we kind of were a little apprehensive to leave our car, say, at Swamp Point and start this hike, which one could do.
Right.
Because if the weather turned bad while we were on the hike, you know, we could be snowed in for the winter. So
So
we decided to go to Big Saddle, which is, as you know, quite a bit lower. And still not, you know, not immune to a snowstorm, but quite a bit lower in elevation than Swamp Point. And you have lower access roads, lower elevation roads that you can drive parallel to the plateau, which are at lower elevation. So we felt like this gave us a little bit of extra
absolutely
security if the weather turned bad over that 12 days. So
yeah.
Yeah, so we drove in there, and I don't know if you've been in that area. It's just really cool. There's a trail that drops off the rim that goes along below Crazy Jug Spring, and there's an old cattle trough there. I mean, a feed, you know, watering trough.
Okay.
Built into the side of the trail. It's concrete, so you know, cowboys have used this trail sometime in the last 50, 75 years and put in this infrastructure, but it disappears quite quickly. You know, you're in the Torah week, basically, and it disappears, and you have to start working your way down and through the Coconino. And I remember it being incredibly brushy. It was really problematic to get down into Crazy Jug Canyon. So this is the canyon that is essentially the continuation of the fault trace that comes up Mauve Canyon and White Creek on the south side of southeast side of Powell Plateau, and then across and down through Mauve Saddle, and then down Saddle Canyon, and then up Crazy Jug. So you know you've got faulting in there, which allows you to negotiate the red wall. And so we just started down, and it was like, you know, beautiful colors in the trees, which was really, really spectacular.
Oh, nice.
And you get down there, and eventually you get into the red wall. Like I say, it was very, very brushy. But we headed down as far as we could in the red wall, and then there was a fall. But, you know, we knew that from Harvey's notes. So none of this trip was new except for the side hiking. New in the sense that we didn't know about routes going and things like that.
Okay.
So we knew that there was a climb around this fall. So we followed River Wright down Crazy Jug to the final point, and there's a break there that gets you down through the red wall pretty easily. And so our camp basically was in that little area there. And we kind of went back up Crazy Jug to explore the red wall from below, and there's a couple of other side drainages like Timp Canyon coming off the rim from the east, and we poked around in there just checking things out. But this was the entrance to the big loop around Powell Plateau. So the next morning we put our packs on. Actually, that night we wound up camping on a huge boulder of I guess it was Coconino.
Oh.
It was just in the bed of Tapete's Creek. Now this would be upstream from the main flow, right? This would be
right, just
below the junction with Saddle Canyon. Just a gigantic boulder there that in the middle of the valley bottom that had enough flat space for the three of us to spread out our sleeping bags.
Huh.
Yeah, really,
huh, really
something. So in the morning we got up and started down to Pete's Creek, and of course, eventually you catch the flow coming out of the spring there, to Pete's Spring, and there's quite a bit of flow even in October. Of course, it was manageable; we didn't have any problems, but we had to get in, you know, basically to our, I would say, our belly button in the creek to get through the narrows in, I think it's the Shinimo quartzite. Anyways, I'm not quite clear on that, but. It kind of was ironic to me because, you know, I'd been through there something like 25 years before on that solo trip. Maybe it's 21 years. And I hadn't been able to cross to Pete's Creek, right? And here I was wading down it. And so it was kind of an interesting experience. But it was very cold. I remember being quite cold.
I bet.
You know, not only the cold water being cold coming out of the Red Wall Spring, but it's kind of the second part of October, and it was chilly from the morning
and the
morning
sun,
air.
Yeah, so. The sun wouldn't have been in there at the time. It would have been very cold.
Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, we negotiated that, and you get through the narrows, and, of course, the creek opens up a bit, and you can get out.
Right.
And then from there, as you know, the river runners have just got a golden trail network that they've
right, established
in that whole area. So we basically got on the trail that goes down river left, going down Deer Creek.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, to Pete's Creek.
Yep.
And beautiful trail that, you know, gradually ascends as the topography ascends and up until you're just above the confluence of to Pete's Creek and the river.
Right.
And then, of course, the trail then continues to the southeast, heading for Stone and Galloway.
Yep.
And, I mean, it was even better trail than I expected. I knew there was a trail there, and I'd seen pictures of it, you know, but it was even better than I expected. So I'm sure that initially there was probably mules in there that established that trail and deer. And then, of course, the river runners just capitalized on that,
mm-hmm.
on those tracks. But
yeah.
it's just a splendid walk. And, of course, it's just, It's another one of these experiences, Tom, where you think to yourself, if everybody knew how easy this hiking was, there'd be a million people in here, you know, because that portion of the hike was so straightforward and easy, because there's just a trail and you're going down these flat slopes, flat or gently inclined slopes of strata. And well, of course, it's no easy trick getting to that point. That's what separates the crowds from the hardcore people, I guess. And but really, when you get into some of these areas, it's incredibly easy to get around, and that's kind of what makes, you know, adds to the specialness of it, I think.
So. Yeah.
So, anyways, we continued heading up river, and as you know, the trail stays above the river there, a few hundred feet, and it's following along on the Tonto platform, and until we got to Stone, and I think we camped at Stone that night.
Okay.
And now, this trip was kind of relaxed for the other two guys, because every time we got to a drainage coming down from above, they would sit there and relax in the shade of the boulders and whatnot. And then I would drop my pack and I'd go up as far as I could.
Take off, yeah.
And take off and head up to get into these red wall alcoves, you know, where you get up there, you go up as far as you can under the red wall, and there's inevitably a pour off that's like 300 or 400 feet above you, and you can sit in this big amphitheater with a way up above you an overhang of red wall, and just really special. And there's always like redbud trees in there, you know, and so I was doing a lot. The plan was that I was going to do a lot of this side hiking, and that was my objective, to get up as many of these creeks as possible. So the first one I tried was Stone, and so I went up, and you know, you get up there to a fall in the Precambrian, and the waterfall, and there is a climb around that I'm aware of, but I didn't have time to do that, to get into the upper drainage.
Beautiful hike up there.
Is it? So how far up can you get?
No, I mean up to that last waterfall that you got to. Yeah, you have to backtrack a ways there and then climb up and around, but the spring is just coming right out of the Phragmites in the hillside. It's not like there's kind of a big mouth kind of thing that you can see.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's one place I'd really like to get back to, you know, because I'd like to go higher in that valley. And, and as we talked about earlier, you know, I think you told me you can actually get through.
You can get out Galloway, but not
Galloway,
Stone.
Yeah. Yeah, and I had kind of pretended to Arnie Kunzel that I knew there was a way to get up the red wall in one of these canyons, you know, on my big solo trip when I was 19, I guess, and not knowing really anything about the area. And so subsequently I basically realized there weren't too many options for getting up through the red wall on the west side of Powell. So until you told me about the one in Galloway. So I really want to get back in there and try that in both these creeks. So, but anyways, back down to river level, and I think we got down to the river at Dubendorf and camped there, at Dubendorf Rapids. And so we had water there, and then you can work your way along the river there. I seem to recall we weren't too far above the river there. Down to bedrock, and here's another one where I spent a lot of time going upstream.
Okay.
So this would be the next day, right?
Yeah.
And I think from bedrock there you have to climb up and get up back up onto the Tonto a few hundred feet above the water, and follow that bench, because it's pretty sheer down, you know, along the river.
That's right.
So
but just getting from the drainage just upstream of Galloway to bedrock, that's a good little scramble in there. It's that super group of rock, which is really hard. Do you remember that section in there?
I vaguely recall, yes, doing, you know, like step arounds on buttresses and
weird things like
that.
Yeah, not a lot of fun.
Yeah, I Yeah, I don't remember the details of it for sure, but nothing really stands out. But certainly, it was one of those things where, you know, it contrasted dramatically with the easy hiking I was alluding to.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
The day prior.
It got you there. That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you really have to be careful and poke around and look for options, you know, and try dead ends and things like that. So, but you know, you know, if you just keep at it, persevere,
yeah.
You're going to find a way. So, you know, it was fairly straightforward. So Bedrock was pretty spectacular because I got up pretty far. Well, I got up all the way as one could in that canyon in both the main arms. The main east arm and then a southeasterly arm that contributes to that. So, mm-hmm. you know, and again, the guys were hanging out below, and there were several instances on this hike in this stretch from Galloway down to about 128 where we encountered bighorn and mule deer, both.
Okay.
So, you know, that was pretty interesting to see these beasts in this area because it's not that. You know, there's not an abundance of water unless you can get to the river.
Right.
And like, I don't remember any of these drainages having a flow. But of course, this would be October, and they don't have much of a drainage area on Powell Plateau because the upper limit of these or the upper areas of these drainages are at the neck of Powell Plateau where it's relatively narrow. In any event, you know, it's kind of interesting to see. To see the big mammals down there, and quite honestly, you know, from Bedrock down, we had a straightforward route, but I don't recall seeing any evidence of people. You know, there's no trails from that point south, and I don't recall even seeing footprints. So you really start to get the sense that you're kind of in a really, you know, wild setting. So. Anyways, Bedrock was another campsite, and because the fellows were being so generous with their time, letting me go off on these side hikes, and the next day we continued on down towards and crossed or well past opposite Spectre Chasm,
right,
and down to 128 Mile, and here we were able to get down to the river. Again, I don't remember too many of the details of the climb, but certainly, you know, we were able to access the river there and get some water, and of course, I went up 128 looking for whatever I could find. I mean, obviously, you know, the assumption is there's no way out up there, you know, but you always want to just make sure.
Go look, yeah, that's right.
You just want to make sure, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so. You know, come run up 128 and then come back down. And then we continued down and we did find, again, water. We were able to get down to the river between 128 and 127.
Okay.
So that, and I think that might have been a break that we were unaware of.
Okay.
And then the next day we actually did the same thing in 127 Mile, and I went up that, and we were able to get down to the river there. So, you know, you can see the pattern here, right?
Yeah.
Day after day, you know, a little bit of lateral movement along the up river, you know, but a bunch of side hiking and trying to push through in various places to see what's up there, you know. So, yeah, it was just really, really a lot of fun. Now, at that point, from 127 Mile, you're starting to come around Alarcon Terrace there, and there aren't as many of these side canyons.
Right.
So we were pretty much all three of us hiking together most of the day. And we started around, we passed above Fossil Rapids, and I remember there, spectacular, because there's a travertine. We were talking about the travertine in Stephen Isle, I believe, a few weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and coming around Ell's Chasm, coming around Fossil Rapids on the east side of the river, there's more of these travertine deposits, and, you know, a little tricky, you know, having to step around corners, blind corners, and on travertine with the river right below you, and
yeah.
and you don't quite know, you know, how solid things are, and but it all worked out fine. There were no issues there, and
when I think about that area just upstream of Fossil, I seem to remember there's a big landslide coming down from River Wright, and along the river anyway, there's a lot of just giant boulders. Sort of this bouldery hillside, and all any tapetes in there is totally covered over by these boulder bits.
That's right, exactly, and that's exactly what I'm thinking of, that area in there, because it was really complicated, you know. There was no, even when you have a foot of tanto platform, you're going to have a trace there, a track. You can walk on, you know,
yeah.
and there's none of that, so yeah. it was constantly having to crawl around on boulders and, you know, test your weight, and of course the brush in between the boulders is gets in your way, and so
right.
just, you know, one of those parts of the hike where it goes a little bit slower than
yeah.
than usual, right, and you have to concentrate, but you're glad when it's done, you know, and of course these things always they always end, and
right.
Eventually you get back onto terra firma, and from there up, the hiking in Conquistador Isle was just spectacular, you know,
right.
because the you're basically walking on the Tonto, on the Tapete sandstone slabs right at or just above the river.
Yeah.
And I remember we came around below, just above Forester Rapids, and you know, the way we hiked, the three of us, similar to the way Art and I hiked too, you know, we tend to start out in the morning, you know, walking within a few yards, meters of each other.
Mm-hmm.
But then quickly, you know, everybody selects their own pace, you know,
right.
and you spread out, and sometimes you might be, I don't know, a quarter mile apart, you know,
mm-hmm.
one person in the front, and then the next, you know, 2 hours later, somebody else in front, and then you come back together and you chat, and then you go on your way, and so it's a very leisurely thing, and you know, a lot of the time you're kind of hiking, quote, on your own, even though your partner is, you know, some distance off. So so we're coming around Forester here, and I was in the lead at this point, and I you know, I'm walking through the sandbars on the side of the beach with willows there,
mm-hmm.
and I look over to the side, and I see a beer can. And so I just hop down there, and I pick it up, and there's four beer cans. I don't remember what kind of beer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
But four cans of beer still in the little plastic, you know, ring holders, right?
Right.
Missing two. But I had four beers there, and they were pretty beat up, but they weren't opened, right? They were still not corked, but unopened. And,
right.
And, so I said, oh, man, what a find, you know, because even though it's October, when you're down at the river level, it's warm,
hot. Yeah,
you
it's
know?
Warm.
Yeah, and so, you know, there's a little bit of sweat involved, and we were dealing with all this challenging hiking going through the you know, the red wall slide that we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put those in my pack, and then, you know, we continued on, and to 120, I think it's 122 mile, and this is a fairly short one. You can only go up at about, I don't know, half a mile or something till you get to the fall.
Hmm.
But before I went up, I sequestered the beer in the river. Okay, and so before these guys, I guess, came up behind me,
mm-hmm.
I built a little dam to make sure that they wouldn't drift away.
Right.
Put them in the water and weighted them down with rocks. So they'd be nice and cold when we all rejoined each other, right? So I headed up one 122 mile to the red wall pour off there. It's not very far again.
Hmm.
And then when I came back, you know, the other two had rejoined me, and so I said, I think I got a little treat, you know. And so I reached down in the water and pulled out these four beers, and boy, it was just a great experience,
oh.
you know. So
nice.
You know, just a treat left by the river runners.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it reminds me of another story, similar nature, if we can digress.
Of course.
20 years or so, but I went down You might have remembered I told you about an attempt on Vishnu Temple with my friend Kent McClellan, and with Doug Rickard and Scott Kronberg. But Kent at that time had broken his arm,
right.
and he rebroke it on the attempt of Vishnu, so we had to cancel that. But a couple of weeks, or maybe a month before that attempt, Kent and I did a hike into Cottonwood and Grapevine Creeks on the South Rim. And this is before he broke his arm. And we hiked down Cottonwood and then down into Cottonwood. And there's a descent you can do to the west of the mouth of Cottonwood that goes down a pretty nice, easy slope between Cottonwood and Grapevine Rapids.
All the way down to the river.
Yeah,
yes.
That's right. And so it was really hot. This was kind of like I said, it was latter part of the summer. But we were up there, and it was really hot in summertime, and we were really fit, and wasn't bothering us too much. But we were in the meditation. You know, at the time, a number of people I was hiking with were into transcendental meditation. And,
mm-hmm.
and Kent had gotten into this, and I had gotten into it independently, and my friend Chris Beal had gotten into it. Art and Bruce were they're more logical guys than I am, so they managed to stay away from that.
Mm-hmm.
But not that there's any – I'm not complaining or saying there's anything wrong with TM. It was very – very positive thing when I was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But Kent and I were both into transcendental meditation, so we got down to the river this morning. It was around 10 in the morning. We'd camped on the Tonto in the evening of this trip, and then worked our way down to the river where it was nice and cool next to the water, and we said, okay, time to meditate, and relax for 20-25 minutes. So we sit down, cross-legged, close our eyes, put our hands on our knees, and sit there meditating over your mantra, for 25 minutes. And eventually, it's time's up, and so you kind of come out of it, and you slowly readjust and open your eyes. And I look right at my feet, and while we were meditating, these cans of beer came floating by in the river. And it was just like, the Maharishi was sending us a special gift.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was just so classic, So, of course, meditation people are not supposed to drink, You're supposed to lead a very clean lifestyle. But we weren't going to let that stop us. We cracked right into those ice river-cold beers, and really enjoyed them. So, the river often provides delights, thanks to the river runners.
Right, we're spilling beers left, right, and center as they go down the river. Oh,
yeah,
dear.
Yeah. Anyways, I remember that being a fairly good highlight of that that trip, and then so we continued hiking along Conquistador Isle, and Blacktail Canyon was another one that we went up. You can't go up very far, in the main bed. You have to get outside the bed on.
Right.
I think on River Left.
There's some nice narrows in there. You can actually scramble up past this boulder chalk stone, go through some nice narrows, and go right up through to Pete's. But
you can get through, huh?
Yeah. But then eventually you get clipped out in the red wall.
That's right. So we went up, Art and I went up as far as we could, and pretty far, actually,
uh-huh.
I remember. And right up to the limit there. This one was with Art. I remember that one distinctly.
Mm.
And then we came back, and of course you're at the river there, but at that point we were facing a stretch where we didn't know about access to the river, and so I thought that there might be a way to get down at Explorer's Monument,
mm-hmm.
but I wasn't 100% convinced of that.
Okay.
And so we thought, we were wondering where we might be able to get any water between there and say Hakatai, where we knew that there was river access there.
Right.
So it was, I won't say we were nervous or apprehensive or foreboding or anything like that, but it was a concern because it was fairly warm along the river and you go through a fair amount of water, so we started south from Blacktail, and lo and behold, I mean from as you're hiking along the Tonto through there on these slabs of sandstone, mm-hmm. you can see upriver, and I'm looking upriver ahead in Stephen Island. I'm thinking that looks like, that might be a possibility there. And so a couple of miles up Stephen Isle from Blacktail, there is a drop and yeah. a break, and we were able to get down there and refill. So that was a really nice campsite. We actually camped there right at the river.
Nice.
Yeah, really, really spectacular. So, and at that point then we felt, well, we've got water today, at the most, it's basically a day and a half to Hakatai. So, we're not going to have any serious issues here.
Right.
So we continued on the next day and got to Explorer's Monument, the drainage there. And, as you can get down to the river there too.
Actually, Explorer's Monument, that fault cuts that U in the river twice. So you can get to the river both places there where the fault drops in. Did you do that? So it's downstream of Ells Chasm and then upstream of Ells Chasm. Both of those let you get down to the river.
Yeah, well, that would have been it. Yeah,
great.
I guess so, because the first place I was talking about just a little while ago in Stephen Isle was about a mile downstream from Ells. So
yep.
it may be farther, that access may be farther than the one you're referring to. But
That's about right. That's about right. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, but, we didn't know about these, so it was really kind of neat to be able to find these and then, get to the water. And I think that I'm the only one that went down at Explorer's Monument because, we had assumed, you have to assume you're not going to find water, right?
So you were
and
carrying
so you,
it.
You carry it, right?
Got it.
Yeah, and so there was no need to go down to the river there, if indeed it went.
Right.
So I think I'm the only one that tried that and went down. It could have been that Art went with me. I don't know. I'd have to re-examine the notes, but and then from there, and again, all this was written about. I shouldn't say all of it because these breaks weren't noted by Steck.
Hmm.
At least we didn't recall them. if he it did indeed write about them,
uh-huh.
but. So we were basically retracing Charlie Steck's route here around Powell Plateau.
Right.
And so I remember, he talked about, Steck talked about a possible spring in one of the small drainages opposite Garnet Canyon, for instance, and a seep, not much of a spring, but a seep.
Okay.
And when we went through there was nothing. It was just totally dry as
yeah.
a bone. And of course, as you're going up river now, you're starting to rise. The Tonto is rising above the river, so you're getting to be several hundred feet above the river.
Right.
And it becomes, and of course, the full thickness of the Tapetes is rearing up, so that you have quite a monumental cliff to get through if you're going to find a way through. So it was looking less and less likely that we'd be finding water from there on.
Hmm.
But then again, we got to the drainage. This would be the second drainage downriver from Waltenburg. And I just, we were there in the late afternoon, and I just said to the guys, I'm going to go down and try it out and see what we can do, because it just looked like there might be a way down through the Tapetes and then the Schist. And we managed to get all the way down. And I think that was actually Bruce and I that went down to the river
that
there.
That might be around 114 mile.
Okay.
There's a break there that goes through.
Yeah.
Gets
so
to the river. Yeah.
Yeah. On River Right.
On River Right. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sure you guys from the river see all these things and hike up them and
right. We're like, oh, this is nice. We're up on the tunnel. That's nice. And we scurry back down again. But,
yeah. Right.
But coming from the top down, you haven't a clue where these things are.
But that's right. Yeah, you're just kind of poking about, wondering if it's going to go or
right.
or whatever. So, so it was a nice side jaunt to get down to the. Even if you're carrying water up top,
mm-hmm.
you get your plunge your head into this nice cold river, and it just mm-hmm. feels so relaxing and invigorating and I'll just lean down and start lapping up the water right out of the river. I usually mm. don't bother too much with purifying the river water. So, anyways, you know, we continued on, and as you know, you're getting as you go up river now, you're getting well above the river level.
Yes.
On the Tonto platform. So we continued around, heading Waltenburg and Hockaty. At Hockaty, we went down to the river there, and of course, we picked up the trail from Bass's mine workings.
Right.
All the way well over into Shinimo Creek. So that was pretty spectacular. And I do recall we got benighted because we spent a lot of time in Hockaty, and then headed up to the Tonto in the late afternoon, and we're heading east, and I you know, the assumption or the plan was that we were going to get to Shinimo Creek,
mm-hmm.
and camp there. But I remember it just got dark on us really fast.
Huh.
And we wound up camping on a incredibly exposed Bright Angel shale slope just south of Fan Island.
Okay.
So it was, that's where we were, you know, just short of the trail network down into Burrow Canyon and
there's no way to get to the river easily there.
No,
I mean,
no.
From Burrow, you can get into 110, but you got to know that route, and it's hard to do, so.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, huh.
Yeah, so we just camped on the shale there, you know, it wasn't, you make do, right? It wasn't the best spot, but it wasn't the worst either, so, you know, kind of a memorable night. And then the next day, of course, we headed down and followed the trail into Shinimo Creek. So, you know, kind of in familiar ground at this point, right?
Yeah.
So, because most of, I think all of us had been down the North Bass Trail at some point. So, so we're kind of getting to the end of the trip, you know. I mean, we still had some exciting times ahead of us, but once you'd made the circumnavigation of Powell, you know, at the river level, it was kind of a big accomplishment, right? So, So we basically poked around in Shinimo Creek, and then hiked out the trail up to Moab Saddle, and then from there we had to get back. You know, our car's over here at Big Saddle, right?
Right.
So we still had to get over to that, and I had walked the Esplanade in my 1970 solo hike. 70s solo hike. I had walked the Esplanade east of Saddle Canyon and Crazy Jug, but my recollection was that it was really miserable hiking through the Manzanita, and we knew there was a route down Saddle Canyon, so we elected to go that way. And I'll tell you, Tom, this is late October, you know, and you're up there on Powell Plateau, Moab Saddle, and there's all these softwood trees, you know, the aspen are everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's the Gary Oaks and all sorts of deciduous vegetation. And we started down the canyon of Saddle. And I remember it being, with all these maples, too. That was
was
the critical tree. I remember it starting out brilliant red. And you're just kind of walking in this little... like an alcove right above the creek. You know, you're walking in the creek bed, and the trees are kind of growing over you, and there's just some places just enough room to stand up or to kind of lean over with your backpack and continue on, you know.
Mm.
But everywhere it was infiltrated with this reddish light from the sun coming down through the maples, and, you know, cutting, you know, the light passing through or reflecting off those red leaves. And of course there were so many of these red maple leaves that had accumulated in the duff on the creek bottom, and it was just like, it was really kind of magical to be walking down. And then as you went down farther, the colors changed, because it went to like a golden hue, and then eventually to a yellow hue, and then of course the maples were unaffected, and they were more or less green down at the bottom. So there was this transition as we walked down. It almost sounds like I'm describing some sort of drug-induced trip, you know? But it was just one of those experiences that that really made an impression on me. And I don't know if the other two guys even noticed it, but
wow.
That's certainly the way it affected me. You know, it was really, really kind of a very special, special morning experiencing that.
Nice. Magical.
Yeah, and then from there on down, you know, basically we worked our way down Saddle, and there's a number of, I'm sure you've been up through Saddle, there's a number of drops in the red wall, but they're all negotiable. Mm. You know, you just have to wait in places, and so we're, you know, back down to the bottom there, and I think we spent the night probably at the near the area where we had camped at the beginning, you know, down at the junction of Crazy Jug and Saddle, and
yeah.
So the next morning was, you know, to head back to the car, and of course, you always want to do something different, right? You always want to make put a different line on the map. So I suggested that we hike along the Esplanade to the west, once we got above the red wall, that we hike along the Esplanade to the west of Crazy Jug, because, you know, there's a route that goes up there that we'd heard about. And just a slide up through the Coconino and Toroib and Kaibab. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was at one time supposedly some trail on that, and there may be in the right place, but we didn't find it. And all I can remember, though, is that it was pretty warm, and it was just all the sage up in there was just blowing off all this pollen.
Oh, wow.
And I'm allergic to sage pollen.
Oh.
And I'm not in a critical way, but it causes me bad allergy problems like running eyes and sniffles and sneezing. And I remember going up that slope with all this pollen just blowing in my face, you know, and this golden yellow. I mean, it's kind of pretty when it doesn't have any effect on you, but just having a totally miserable time of it. And it's kind of unfortunate because it had been such a magical trip up to that point, you know, and then to have to end it like that. And then we get to the rim and okay, at least the climbing's done and the sage is gone. I'm not going to be crashing through that. But we get to the rim and start to relax, and all of a sudden there's all these little tiny black flies that were all, you know, settling on us, and it was like, God, let's get to the car as quick as we can and get out of here.
You mean those little buffalo gnats, the biting black flies?
Yeah, I've never heard them called buffalo gnats, but that's got to be what they are because they're biting. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it was just like kind of an anticlimactic ending, you know, But you know, as soon as you put your pack on and start walking, everything, you know, the bugs, you leave the bugs behind, and you get a little bit of a breeze.
Yeah.
And so we got back to the car, and you know, everything was fine at that point. So it was just a great trip, you know, fantastic trip. And like I say, it's definitely one of the highlights of the many hikes I've done. So
and
Art and I talk about that as one of the two or three hikes that we would repeat. You know.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of people who will do that at the river level. It's, you know, you sort of take the shortcut. You go from Swamp Point and Saddle down to Pete's and out that way, and you don't really do the walk around. Or if you go to Powell Plateau, you walk around on the rim on top of the plateau.
Yeah, yeah, but for sure.
Don't walk. Walk at that level, so it's
no,
neat.
But it really is. It is a tremendous trip, and I mean, part of the reason I think is because you're really committing time-wise.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, we could have moved faster if I hadn't done any of these side hikes, right? Because that, you know, that was time taken away from forward movement. But you're still looking at a minimum of probably, you know, 7 or 8 days, right. I guess, to do that trip that I just outlined.
And Bruce and Art had a wonderful time because they got to just chill out and hang out.
Well, I hope
it's
so.
Good.
I mean, of course they did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, everybody, everybody did exactly what they wanted to do, you know,
nice.
And that's the perfect trip, right?
Nice.
Nobody's
great.
Pressured into doing anything they don't want to do, and nobody feels disappointed that they didn't get to do something they wanted to do. So,
very good.
Yeah, very nice hike. So.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was 97 in the fall.
Right.
And so the next trip that we did was again in the spring, as I'm coming down, of course, from Canada.
Okay.
Can't do these trips every month like some people do, but and we waited for good weather. So in April of 98, Art and I decided we wanted to go into Olo Canyon. So continuing this this vein of Esplanade exploration that we had started on in a previous couple of trips, you know, and just getting out there on these terraces and walking forever, you know, for hours and hours and miles of just beautiful flat walking with tremendous views and the occasional water pockets, you know, that or water lakes that that kind of emerge here and there unexpectedly, and of course there's always the finds of granaries and points and things like that. So, you know, just a tremendous area to go hiking. So, and we decided we also wanted to get down Olo, right? Try to get down to the river. So, you know, we talked a few weeks ago about our first trips into that area, and we hiked down to the rim of Olo, the Redwall Rim, and could see that there was a big drop there. And so we knew we had to come in with ropes to negotiate that drop.
Right.
So we started this trip, and I refreshed my notes, reviewed my notes before you called here, and I at the beginning of my notes I had written down, oh, by the way, you know, I'm happy to provide you with my notes at some point if you want them, you know, because they will probably provide a little bit more certainty about some of the statements that I'm making here.
Well, someday those notes should be archived somewhere.
Uh-huh.
At the archive of your choice. I could certainly mention a couple when we're done. So.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Anyways, I was reviewing my notes about this trip, and I had written in there that, of course, this is just Art and myself, this one. Bruce wasn't on this one. Hmm. And I had written in there that we were starting up out to Pasture Wash on that road, and it was really rough going that year because of rains.
Okay.
And there were huge mud puddles and pockets, long stretches of road where you're just looking at the road, the Pasture Wash Road, heading across there, and it's got water in it for like 150 feet, and you have no idea how deep it is, you know. And so you know, Art had his Honda, and he's a great driver in these kinds of conditions, and you know, he would keep the left wheels on the kind of the side of the pond, you know, while the right wheels were down in the deeper part more centrally. And anyways, we got through no problem, but at one point we noticed there's a pickup truck following us, and he's actually gaining on us. And so you know, we basically stopped at one point when he got close enough, and it turns out it was a park ranger. And so he chatted with us, and you know, he just asked us what we were planning to do, and we didn't give him any details. And he said, well, you know, the road up onto Great Thumb, you'll never make it up there because it's just completely impassable to your car. So, you know, and don't forget, if you're going to go camping anywhere off, away from the rim, you need a, you know, permit for overnight camping. And we said, okay, yeah, we'll keep that in mind. And, so anyways, he left us, and I guess he went down towards, I'm not sure where he was going, but eventually we worked our way up onto Great Thumb, and we made it, you know, Art made it up to the ledge where it's a fairly steep little incline, about 30 degrees with these open sandstone ledges or limestone ledges.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have typically gotten stopped there. So we parked the car there and then headed north to, basically along the road there, the Jeep Trail,
right,
following the rim to a point about halfway up Fossil Bay.
Okay.
And from there, we headed west into one of the eastern arms of Matkatamiba Canyon. So there was a route there near Paya Point, just east of Paya Point. And you can work your way down through the Kaibab there, and then follow Torweep ledges around to the southwest, and then find a break down through the Coconino that gets you down to the Esplanade. So again, this was a Harvey route. This was nothing we didn't know.
Okay.
And
this is a route into mat cat amoeba that comes off the northwest corner of Great Thumb, more or less?
Not quite
that far west.
It's not that far north.
North, okay.
Yeah, there's a place called, well, you know where Mount Aqaba is?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just southeast of that, about 2 miles or something.
Okay,
like that.
All right.
Yeah, close to Aqaba.
Okay.
So, you know, that was one of the objectives on this trip, too, was to climb Aqaba. So, you know, we found our way down and we camped, we got down to the Esplanade then, and that's where we made our camp for that night. And the next morning, we started west, and we took our packs to the saddle that's between Aqaba and the rim, and dropped our packs there.
Okay.
And then went along up and climbed up the north side of Mount Aqaba, and then did that ascent. And it was really interesting because we had seen all these footprints on the route.
Hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of unusual to see footprints out there. But these were very fresh. And when we got to the summit, we found in the register that the people who had been up, you know, had been up 2 days before us. So,
oh, wow.
Kind of like very fortuitous, you know. And but that's such a neat summit, you know.
Yeah.
That is such a fine little climb. We didn't know what to expect. And then, you know, you get on top there and it's just a – it's just those limestone block houses, you know, that
yep.
are just an easy scamper up, and just a lot of fun. So it was a great start for our hike, and we went back down and grabbed our packs, and then, you know, proceeded along the Esplanade, and you know, a lot of this is, I don't remember much about it because it's the same kind of hiking, foot after foot, mile after mile, you know, and just kind of grows into a blur, but you know that every step of the way is fantastic because you've got these tremendous views, you know,
yeah.
and it's just so much fun. And so and by this time, you know, we were starting to cover some ground on these terraces on the Esplanade, you know. So this particular hike, we wanted to go out and hike around Chicopanagi Mesa, which is the big one that's between Mat Cat and Olo. So we took our pack over to the fault ravine, Sinyala fault ravine, and crossed the fault ravine, went up on the mesa, and dropped our packs, and then used the rest of that day to do a nice circuit of Chicopanagi Mesa. So following the Esplanade sandstone rim all the way around, you know. And I remember when we got around to the north side of that loop, so basically just above Olo, you know, the south side of Olo, we were having showers during the day. You know, it would be sunny, and then there'd be a shower, a squall come through, and a little bit of rain, or maybe not, you know, and breezy. And we got to this point overlooking Olo, the mouth of Olo, and we could see across to the north rim, and of course you could see that it's raining over there in the same manner, right? Here and there there'd be a downpour, a squall, and we heard this big roar, and Art said, "It's the wind." And I said, "Well, yeah, I guess so." And I just happened to look across at a place called Jewel Spring, which is north of Pegwequash Point, and all of a sudden I saw this down overpour, right?
Oh, wow.
A muddy torrent of water falling over the uppermost sandstone, Supai sandstone ledges, pretty much at our level, on the north side of the river.
Wow.
And I told Art, I said, "No, look over there, man. This is what this roar is. It's this pour off from a local rainstorm over there."
Wow.
And you know, I've rarely seen that in the canyon.
Yeah.
I know people who have been on river trips who have taken pictures of tremendous pour-offs coming over the red wall in rainstorms. And
right.
A colleague of mine in the office here in Vancouver took a trip down the river, and she got a spectacular photograph of these pour-offs coming over the red wall in a rainstorm. But I'd never actually seen that before. So to see that from such a distance was
cool.
Very cool, very cool. And of course, you know, after a few minutes, the flow subsided.
Oh wow!
And it more or less stopped. And of course, the wind or the roaring that we had both heard did not stop. So that convinced us that Art was right. You know, it was just the wind. It wasn't the roar of the water. So that pretty cool little pour off there. So so from there, then the next day, we finished that day hike and camped at the Sinyala Fault Trace there up on Chicopanagi Mesa. And the next day was our objective to get down Olo. So we hiked down the Butte Fault, the Sinyala Fault Trace, down to the Redwall Rim in Olo, and then headed upstream to the southeast to intersect the drainage.
Right.
And dropped our packs there, and then headed down with our ropes. In fact, it's not very far. It's right there is you know, just a short distance where we dropped our packs is where the rappel is. And have you done that drop?
I have not done that drop.
Yeah. Well, it's 125 feet.
Okay.
And you know, you have to go over some boulders at the top. It's pretty spectacular because you go over the boulders and then you're just kind of hanging free for a while. And to look up, you see these boulders perched above you, you know, in the big slot. It's kind of intimidating. But we got down and left our rope, of course, and they headed down. And we, you know, there's a few smaller drops in the bed of Olo. In fact, one of them, we left the rope because we didn't know if we would be able to negotiate the climb up. So we had Jumars with us because we knew we were going to be Jumaring up the big fixed rope at the top, right at the top of the Redwall.
Right.
So we threw a fixed line over this one boulder. This is in the middle of the Redwall, and then went down over that. And coming up, I remember when we came back up, we definitely used that fixed line. So it might have been, I don't know. I've got a good photo of it. I'd have to look and see if we could do it without the aid right of the rope, but. So anyways, we're feeling pretty hot, and we get way down in the Redwall there. I think we're into the Temple Butte. Is there Temple Butte in that?
There is Temple Butte in there. You
okay.
Bet.
Yeah, and there's another big drop in there, right? And so I recall that we spent a lot of time, I think, on the east side of the drainage, looking for a route through. You know. Back and forth, not being able to find anything, eating up time. That was the critical thing. And eventually we gave up and we tried the other side and then we found a very easy route through that blockage. And we got down to the drainage, and we started heading down, almost running, you know, down the creek to try to get to the river. Mm. And at some point we just said we got to go back because. You know, we can't just do the whole return hike in the dark. There's some serious canyoneering issues to deal with. So we turned around about a third of a mile from the river, I'm guessing, and headed back. You know, it was a little bit of a disappointment, but that's the way it goes. So we did reverse the route, and we wound up doing the big Jumar. 125 foot drop at the top. We did that in the dark. So it was, it was timely. It was good that we had turned around when we did.
Yeah.
And then, of course,
so I got a question for you.
Yeah.
I've been in Olo from the river only with no ropes. So you can only go up so far, but you get to sort of this last kind of fairly good sized drop. And I stumbled into some sheep, some bighorn sheep.
Oh, really?
And I thought, how did they get here? They must have come in, as you mentioned, working through the dolomites or the limestones to get down past these dry falls. And I thought, okay, well, if you just work these benches out upstream or downstream from Olo out into the main canyon proper, you'd probably find ways up and down them here and there.
Right. Well, I've often wondered about that. You know, looking at the topographic maps of the River Canyon from, like, say, 140 mile down to Havasu, how much of that is actually hikeable? You know, if you put together the ledges and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that I've heard rumors of people doing parts of that at least.
Yes, I think that's right.
And that would be a fantastic trip to try and
piece that together.
Yeah, talk about exploration.
Yeah.
Better have a couple ropes with you.
But
exactly. So we didn't see any sheep in there. That would have been pretty exciting.
So you guys got back to your packs in the dark.
In the dark, yeah. And fortunately, there's a nice campsite right there, right? And so that we just, hunkered down there for the night. And you know, the rest of the hike was kind of just relaxed hiking. The next morning we got up and we followed the Red Wall Rim downstream to the northwest. And I think, you know, the last time we talked, I told you the story about how Art and I had hiked up the Sinyala Fault Trace between Olo and 140 Mile, and there were these beautiful pools with little cottonwoods and maples around, not maples, I'm not sure what little cottonwoods, and the frogs, you know, that were in these pools. And so the pools were there again, but there were no frogs this time. So we had a nice relaxing, you know, walk up that climb again and up to the saddle. And then again, there's another one of these giant terraces that is out of, you know, to your west there, above Keyhole Bridge. And so we spent the rest of that afternoon exploring the terrace that goes out to the west.
Nice.
And got out to where we could look right down on Kanab Creek, the mouth of Kanab, and there was a cairn out there, a surveying cairn.
Huh.
And it had a marker on it. It said, was stamped 1923. We couldn't actually make out the specific date.
Wow.
But it did say 23. So I guess is that bird's eye?
23 would have been USGS, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
I don't know who was doing the land survey, but, you know, bird's eye was doing the river survey.
I don't know
if they connected in with any land surveys out there then or not.
Wow. I really don't know. But it was kind of surprising because it's out in the middle of nowhere for 1923, right? And so we came back and camped kind of in the fault trace, and then the next morning we did another day hiking out on the northeast side of this terrace, and got to where we could look directly across at Fishtail Point, you know.
Yes.
And look down on the river there, and there was I remember seeing a granary out there.
Huh.
But that terrace was kind of didn't have a whole lot of water pockets or evidence of Aboriginals for sure.
Okay.
So, yeah, and then after that, we just kind of headed following the Esplanade, following the route that we had gone on the year before with Bruce, and where we saw horses in 140 mile, and eventually got around to the route that goes up to Tehuda Point.
Yeah.
And the two of us went out that way.
Nice.
And then followed the rim road back. And there'd been a fire up there. I remember that.
Yes.
On the rim.
Yep.
Yeah, and it was pretty messy because it was a lot of charcoal around, right?
Oh, wow. Okay.
And a fantastic trip, you know. And,
nice.
And again, exploring these great Esplanade hikes and these fantastic chasms, you know, these side canyons like Olo and Matcat that are just such clefts, you know, and God, now you telling me that you've seen sheep down there, I really want to go and see about pushing this route along the river, you know.
Yeah, how do they do that? So so, and they're sure-footed, and so there must be some routes down there.
Yeah, yeah. I often wonder if they're, you know, how much more sure-footed that they are than we are, you know, versus how much of it is just, you know, stupidity on their part or our part. You know, some people would say what we're doing is stupid when we do this kind of stuff.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, how do they ever get stressed, you know?
I would
imagine
they do.
When they're doing some traverse?
Occasionally they make missteps, but so do we.
Yeah.
And for the most part, we can go where they go. And they try to go the easy places just like we do.
Mm-hmm.
So that just makes me think there must be something out there.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Well, see, there's always another adventure,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
There's always another objective. Yeah. It just never lets up, you know?
Well, this might be a good place to, speaking of another place to go, put a comma on this interview series, and we'll pick it up again with another adventure later on in 1998, maybe.
Okay, that sounds great, Tom. I'm happy to do it.
All right, thanks, Jim. Well, then with that, this will conclude part 13 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Jim Haggart. Today is Sunday, May 16th, 2021. My name is Tom Martin, and Jim, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Tom. It's been a pleasure.